Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Murder Mile, a true crime podcast, an audio guided walk featuring many of London's untold, unsolved, and long forgotten murders, all set within and beyond the West End. Today's episode is about Tudor Simeonov, a good moral man who earned an honest wage as a bouncer. But when his colleagues came under attack from a group of selfish thugs, the new life he had hoped for was destroyed in the blink of an eye. Murder Mile is researched using authentic sources. It contains moments of satire, shock, and grisly details. And as a dramatization of the real events, it may also feature loud and realistic sounds. So that, no matter where you listen to this podcast, you'll feel like you're actually there. My name is Michael, I am your tour guide, and this is Murder Mile. Episode 143, The Last Defense of Tudor Simeonov. Today, I'm standing in Park Lane, W1. Two streets west of the massacre of Flight LL016. Two streets southeast of the royal delusion of Godratolla Barani. And a few hundred yards east of the unforgivable death of Gladys Wilson. Coming soon to Murder Mile. Sandwiched between Hyde Park and Mayfair, Park Lane is supposedly one of London's most desirable areas, where only the super wealthy can afford to live. With millionaires' pads given an unrestricted view over the city, they are surrounded by luxury car showrooms like Aston Martin, Barabbas and BMW, and five-star hotels like Hilton, Grosvenor House and the Dorchester. But it's not the kind of place where you go, "Ooh, look, stylish," or "Oh, look, fashionable." As the wealthy tend to have more money than taste. Park Lane is little more than a six-lane carriageway, chock full of the choking fumes of trucks. It's grim, it's dirty, and it's foul. Of course, here you will always see a preening hyperponce failing to look so smug as his super-fast penis extension overheats in the traffic. And old money oil magnates with facelifts so fierce, you'll wonder if the wind tunnel is a super trendy new bar. But mostly, you'll just see fakers. Vacuous talent vacuums, unable to utter a single syllable except,
"Oh my God!"
owing to the grossly dysmorphic S shape that they've twisted their figures into. With lips, bum and boobs out, but everything else sucked in, like they're learning to breathe through their bumholes. At 80 Park Lane sits a vague brown door with frosted glass and potted plants on both sides. Squished between a 24-hour garage, a mini dealership, and an eight-story mansion block above, it looks like the back door to a loading bay, but it's not. This is the entrance to a stylish £12.5 million townhouse, with glass floors, fine art, and a first-floor roof terrace, all of which you can rent out for £16,000 a month. On New Year's Eve 2018, 80 Park Lane had been rented out for an exclusive party. A ticket-only event for social climbers, the slightly sleazy, and attention seekers whose only life goal is to be seen as it. The night was debauched, but to ensure everyone's safety, they hired good bouncers. One was Tudor Simeonov. It was his first night at this job. But having been there barely 2 hours, it was also his last night alive. As it was here, on New Year's Day in 2019, that Tudor was killed, simply for doing his job. Why do bad things always happen to good people? Tudor Simeonov was someone who deserved a chance to live his dream of a good life in a new land with the woman he loved. But sadly, it was not to be. When a person dies so tragically, it's easy to dismiss the grieving words of their loved ones as generic platitudes which could be about anyone.
He was a good man.
He had a big heart.
He had a bright future ahead.
Everybody loved him.
He died too young.
But in Tudor's case, it was all true. Born and raised in the Romanian capital of Bucharest, the mid to late 80s was a turbulent time, as Romania staggered from Soviet occupation to the collapse of communism, from the oppressive austerity under dictator Nicolae Ceausescu, to revolution, to his execution, and to a country rebuilt. Times were hard, but there is no great mystery as to why good people raise good children. It's how they're brought up, as even against such tragedy and sacrifice, against all odds, good people will emerge. Blessed with loving parents, he was instilled from an early age with Christian values, decency, strength, kindness, and his overriding value that he would always put the needs of others before himself. Being tall and clean-cut, he was handsome but never vain, as he always prided himself in his neatness. Being well-built, as a big guy who could handle himself, to some, he may have appeared a little fearsome, but his physique belied his true self. As a competitive rower, Tudor was a successful part of a sculling crew who hoped, one day, to row for his country at the Olympics. Political turmoil aside, his life was tinged with sadness, as in his early 20s, his dad had died. He could have gone off the rails, he could have turned to drink or drugs, and he could have given up on his dreams. But he didn't. In fact, he never let his stresses show, as no matter what life hurled at him, through it all, he would always smile. But when his mum died, he lost it all. She was his world, but now he was alone. He could have given up, but being raised right, he found the strength to succeed, and then he found love. In 2015, 30-year-old Tudor met 20-year-old Madalina Angel, and the two became one, just as it was meant to be. As if their fate was already written, they got engaged, with plans to marry and to start a family. But as Romania no longer held the right opportunities for this future Olympic athlete, keen to start a new life in a new country with a bright future ahead, Tudor and Madalina moved to England. In October 2018, they caught a flight from Bucharest to Heathrow. The transition would be relatively easy, as their friends already lived in London. They would rent a small flat, Madalena would do her master's degree, and working as a part-time bouncer by night, Tudor could focus on his rowing training by day. Still in their seats, having landed, they uploaded a photo online. It's simple, but the photo showed a young couple beaming with excitement at the start of a beautiful adventure together. The caption simply reads, "Goodbye, Romania." Tudor and Madalena had their whole lives ahead of them, but it would only last 10 weeks. ...2018 had been a testing year. As Prime Minister Theresa May narrowly won a vote of no confidence, while her grinning lapdogs poised behind her with blades to attack, the Brexit withdrawal agreement was clinging on like an unflushable turd. An unemployed turbo douche had left thousands of people stranded, with flights disrupted, by blocking airliners with a drone. And the media retailer HMV went bust, which was a nightmare for people like me, who still use DVD. By the New Year's Eve of 2018, tensions were high, stresses needed to be uncorked, and the people wanted a party. Every Londoner has their own way of booting out the old year and ringing in the new. Some stay at home, some go to bed, some go clubbing, and others shiver on a bitterly cold bridge, going ooh and ah as chemicals explode. But that year, a very exclusive party was being hosted by Fast Eddie. Lord Fast Eddie Davenport was born Edward Ormus Charrington Davenport in a very affluent part of Kensington in 1966. He was privately educated and he came from money, but he was not a lord. Like so many poshos, born with privilege but no purpose, he flitted between money-making schemes like a little boy torn between toys. Therefore, several sources list his occupation as property developer, socialite, and convicted fraudster. In the mid-1980s, he came to public attention as the co-organiser of the Gatecrasher Balls, a series of opulent, debauched parties for the spoilt sprogs of wealthy wastrels and tax dodgers, which he defined as a night of unbridled lust among upper-class Lolitas and public school Lotharios.
Yuck!
It was said to have made over £1 million a year. But being convicted of tax evasion and fraud in 1990, 2005 and 2008, he was imprisoned for 7 years and 8 months, only to be released after three. In July 2010, at 33 Portland Place, an historic townhouse which he had controversially acquired from the Sierra Leone government during a civil war, he hosted a sex and booze-fueled bash for young aristocrats. In typical Fast Eddie fashion, although every guest was treated to free-flowing champagne, trays of cocaine, and a small pool filled with 1,000 litres of cognac, the party was unlicensed. It didn't have an alcohol or entertainment permit, and he was later charged with a noise breachment order. Lord Fast Eddie Davenport would never learn his lessons. And the New Year's Eve of 2018 would be no different. On the night of Monday the 31st of December 2018, Fast Eddie was hosting another boozy sex party for the affluent, the desperate, and the debauched. Advertised in only very select groups, with tables priced at £2,000 a pop, this party was for the so-called cream of society, not the plebs or the hoi polloi. As a stylish three-story townhouse, 80 Park Lane wasn't owned by Fast Eddie, but he had hired it. Not that the owners knew what he was using it for. With a club DJ pumping out tunes, waitresses serving chilled champagne, and complimentary lines of nose candy for the kind of assholes who really don't need chemical help to become more arrogant. As outside, BMWs, Porsches, and even a Lamborghini were parked. Advertised as the ultimate New Year's Eve after party, it opened at 2 a.m. and it closed at 6 a.m. But there was no denying what kind of party this was. Witnesses described it as wild, crazy. One even said, whatever you wanted, it was available. As with flanks of scantily clad ladies, dressed in lingerie, corsets, high heels, and lots of flesh on show, ushered in through the vague brown door, it was unashamedly a sex-themed party, and very possibly an orgy. And although it looked like a well-organized do, being ran by Fast Eddie, small details were overlooked. Like informing the owners, adhering to noise abatement rules, applying for an alcohol and entertainment permit. And as this was an unlicensed event, the bouncers weren't provided with stab-proof vests. For Tudor and his fiancée Madalena, this was their first New Year's Eve in the UK. So it was significant, as it marked not only a break with the sadness of his past, but the start of a bright future ahead. That evening, they kissed, they hugged, and they made resolutions as fireworks exploded across the city. At around 2 a.m, dressed in a crisp white shirt, a neat black suit, and an ID around his neck, Tudor left home. He wasn't meant to work that night, but to help a friend out, he was covering his shift. At 3:41 a.m, CCTV caught Tudor crossing the SO garage and entering 80 Park Lane. His shift would be easy, as with the party half finished, few new guests would actually turn up. And besides, his job was to monitor the party guests, and not the door. It started as a pretty ordinary night for several friends from northwest London. At 11 p.m, Osama Hamad, Noor Hamada, and Shema Lamrani travelled in a black Audi from Northolt to Kingsbury, where they picked up Adam Khalili. They headed to Harlesden for Adam Al-Shalakaini, and joined by Haroon Akram, the group saw in the new year at Akram, a bar and nightclub in Clapham, until the club closed. Keen to keep partying, at 4:30 a.m. they headed to Mayfair, where it was said that an after-hours party was happening. The trip was pointless, which anyone with any common sense would have known. As they didn't have tickets, they hadn't enough money, they weren't pals with Fast Eddie, and as a seedy sex party for affluent socialites, this ragtag group of youths wearing jeans, t-shirts and trainers didn't fit the bill. 21-year-old Adam Khalili was unemployed and subject to a curfew order. His nose was bulbous, his beard was scruffy and the tops of his ears were pointy. 26-year-old Haroon Akram, of no fixed abode, was fat with fuzzy hair, and he waddled like a duck. 24-year-old Noor Hamada a barber from Wembley, had a wonky eye. And although they all acted like they were badass, in truth, they were little more than immature and pathetic. But as it was 26-year-old Osama Hamed's birthday, they were determined to celebrate in style. Although, quite why Osama decided he needed to carry an 8-inch knife to a party is still a mystery. At 5:10 a.m., the black Audi pulled up at the top end of Mount Street, just to the side of the Esso garage. It didn't bother them that their car was blocking traffic. It didn't bother one of the passengers that he had left the rear door open. And it didn't bother them, as they walked through the garage forecourt, that Adam pulled over a bin, scattering litter. As he toked on his ciggy, with a look on his face which declared to the world, Wow, look at me.
I am great.
As Haroon followed behind, strutting like he'd got piles. But the details of what happened that night are a little sketchy. Being dark, noisy, and chaotic, with 80 Park Lane just a few feet away, but out of frame from the forecourt's cameras. What follows is based on witness statements, court records, and several badly shot pieces of grainy footage from two mobile phones. Exit in the forecourt. The group approached the vague brown door and rang the doorbell. As part of protocol, a bouncer peeped through the spy hole and popped the door open a crack.
Yes?
He barked, as Fast Eddie hid behind his guard's towering bulk. Milling about like school kids, trying to act old enough to buy booze, the group of seven lads and two girls declared,
"We're here to party."
But not being rich, famous, on the guest list, or corseted like a high-class pervert who had recently raided a branch of Van Summer's, they were denied entry. To anyone else, no would have meant no. But growing impatient, perhaps at their inability to impress the girls they were with, the boys demanded to be let into the party less than 1 hour before it shut. Again, the answer was no, as the bouncer ushered them out. But before the door was firmly shut, one of the gang dashed in, knocked over a vase and fled. It may seem pretty petty that a grown man would act so petulantly, but with the door now wide open, the group stormed in and security lost control. In the small stylish hallway, fists flew, glass smashed, and another vase was hurled as this gang of selfish mindless yobs began fighting with security. As if, having broken in and caused havoc, they would instantly be invited to stay. But then again, some people are incapable of thinking about anyone else but themselves. And as this melee erupted, it is alleged that Fast Eddie dashed out of the back door. It was then that a knife was pulled and a waitress was slashed. Trained to protect, but with no stab vests nor weapons to defend themselves, just their hands, the bouncers forced these men out of the hallway and onto the pavement. And yet still, this pathetic little gang of angry little turds fought on, kicking and punching, unable to back down like anyone with half a brain. Outside, the fight escalated, growing ever more chaotic as a sea of unlit faces screamed. Flailing limbs impacted with fast smacks. Bystanders were pushed. And with the knife out, a bouncer was stabbed. The guests were protected. But with the door shut, the fight stayed outside. and although the police were on their way, stuck dealing with drunks and idiots, they wouldn't be here for several minutes. At one point, the doorman Atu Nagoi found himself circled by Haroon, Noor, Osama and Adam. Atu's colleagues, Camille Okpara and Hassam Ali, tried to restrain them, but a violent scuffle ensued. As the group bounced off walls, doors and the car showroom window. In the chaos, Shema pushed Osama away, shouting,
"No, Osama, no!"
But at times, it was impossible to tell who was fighting who. And as Atu pushed Adam over the bonnet of a grey Lamborghini, in the struggle, Atu was stabbed. Inside the party, someone ran in, screaming,
"There's a fight upstairs! Someone's been stabbed!"
Some of the lingerie-clad patrons panicked. Some hid, and some fled. But most didn't care, as it didn't concern them. But for Tudor, this wasn't just a job. This was his purpose. At 5:31 a.m, turning on his heels, Tudor dashed up the glass staircase. In the small hallway, he spotted everything he needed to know about what had just occurred. Smashed glass, a broken vase, a splintered door, and the blood of a slashed waitress spattered up the wall and the floor. As outside, he heard screams. At 5:32 a.m, Tudor exited the door of 80 Park Lane. His buddies were outmanned. It was 9 against 3 with 2 injured, as a baying crowd swelled, jeering at the fun as a fight unfurled. And with phones out, not one of them decided to call for help. Instead, they decided to film it, giggling like morons and dreaming about getting likes. Having assessed the scene, Tudor tried to calm everyone down, but the gang were riled up. Doing his best to defend his friends, Tudor was struck with several blows from different assailants. To protect himself, he fought back, and as a professional rower whose training included boxing, he valiantly took on any attacker who came at him or those around him. But fueled by petulance, in the middle of the pavement, Osama Hamid stormed towards him, a knife balled up in his right hand. It was then that the phone footage cut out. Police and paramedics arrived a few minutes later. At the scene, 5 members of staff, Atu Nagoi, Camille Okpara, Hassam Ali, Mark McKinley and Yang Ki, the waitress, were all treated for knife wounds and all would go on to make a good recovery. Tudor had been outside for barely 30 seconds, but having been stabbed in the chest, with a knife having pierced his heart, he staggered back into 80 Park Lane and in a red-lit bathroom, he collapsed. Levoy Rose, the club's promoter, administered first aid there and then, as blood pumped through Tudor's white shirt. He later said, I saw him bleeding. His suit was covered. Blood was coming out of his chest. I grabbed a towel and held the wound. He never said a word to me. I think he was in shock. But as he got paler and quieter, he only survived for about a minute. He lay there, his eyes open, staring up at me. ''33-year-old Tudor Simeonov died at 5:34 a.m. and he was pronounced dead at 6:05 a.m. like cowards. Most of the gang fled and went into hiding, but all would ultimately be arrested. Adam el-Shalakani was caught the next day, Ahmed Munajjad on the 22nd, Haroon Akram on the 28th, Adam Khalili on the 29th, having tried to escape by jumping out of a window, and Osama Hamid, who had inflicted the fatal blow, alongside Noor Hamada, fled to Morocco. But the pair were later arrested on their return. Tried at the Old Bailey on the 23rd of April 2019, as they had all acted as a group and encouraged each other, they were charged under the law of joint enterprise, making them equally culpable for their crimes, which is why many pleaded guilty to the lesser charges of violent disorder and manslaughter. Excepting that the attack wasn't premeditated, on the 25th of March, Judge Anthony Leonard QC sentenced Adam Khalili to 11 years, Haroon Akram to 6 years and 9 months, Ahmed Munajjad to 2 years. Adam el-Shalakani was cleared of violent disorder, and Shema Lamrani was acquitted of perverting the course of justice by disposing of the knife. But unable to prove if Osama Hamada had inflicted that fatal blow, as the footage had cut out and the knife had mysteriously vanished, Osama was sentenced to just 7 years for manslaughter and 3 years for violent disorder. Tudor and his fiancée Madalena had been in Britain for just 10 weeks. But now, their dreams had been smashed by a single selfish act. As she would state in court, "He was the kindest person I knew, and by losing him, I have lost everything. Marriage, children, Olympic hopes, and the promise of a new life." But then again, why do bad things always happen to good people? Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to Murder Mile. As always, a non-compulsory waffle session with added nonsense, as well as a quiz, some extra details about the case, and other such twaddle, will follow after the break. A big thank you to my new Patreon supporters, who are Nick Hammerlink, Vicky Ferrace, Anne Russell, Jade Daniels, Matt Kine, and Jennifer Collier. I thank you all. May the God of Chocolate Buttons rain down sweet treats upon you, and that not a single one of these chalky treats will contain a calorie. Yuck. Murder Mile was researched, written, and performed by myself, with the main musical themes written and performed by Eric Stein and John Books of Cult with No Name. Thank you for listening, and sleep well.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
There we go, folks. There we go. How are we all? Are we all good? How is everyone? Oh, welcome to Extra Mile. Sorry, I should have said that. Welcome to Extra Mile, because this will be for people who don't know about Extra Mile, even though they may have not listen to that last bit I just did. They may not know what this is. This is Extra Mile. It's the unedited, unscripted bit. It's not essential. It's just a bit of fun. People seem to like it, so I do it. I make a cup of tea. We talk about cake. I waffle about life and shit. And then we go into some extra details and we do a quiz, which is a bit of fun. Of which, in the quiz, I ask 10 questions, some of which I may balls up. I've been good the last couple of weeks. Well done, Michael. You haven't ballsed up as much as you normally do. And then there's quiz questions. I do 10. Most people get 2 or 3 right. I don't blame you because a lot of them are quite hard. Not essential to listen to this bit. So if you don't want to, you don't have to. Oh, how are we all? We are good. We are well. Is everyone staying healthy and well and happy? That's important, isn't it? Staying well and happy. Happy? Yeah, fuck it. Let's just say it. Hathy. Hathy. That's a new word. I've created it. We'll all use it from now on. What does it mean? It means happy and healthy. That's a good one, isn't it? Well done. Whew, I've created something. Should I go and pot on it? Let's do a tea. I've just moved away the microphone. I'm going to open up windows and doors because it's afternoon. It's not morning. I was going to record this tomorrow afternoon, but I decided not to. Only because I'm going to have to close over a part of a door because I've got my door open and now my neighbour's looking into my boat and he's thinking, why is that man talking to himself? Let me just pop on a cup of tea. Whoa. Didn't put any water in. Michael, you're an idiot. Do I really want a cup of tea? I don't know. Or maybe I'll do a herbally tea. Let's do a herbally tea. Oops. Yeah, that's on. Good, hang on. Herbally tea, gonna be a peppermint. Right, yeah, coming back. As you've noticed over the last couple of weeks, I've been bumping up the volume on this bit, so hopefully this you can hear this a little bit more. What's going on? What's going on in my little world? Not much. It's the same as everyone, isn't it? It's kind of you when you have a conversation with people, you're like, oh, what you're... You forget whether you've already had that conversation with someone. So you talk, like you get on the phone to family and people and you're there going, oh, should we talk about this? Did we do this last week? And keep having the same conversations because nothing's new anymore. It's weird, isn't it? But it's nice when you do get to have a little moment. You go, ooh, I'm doing something different for a change. That's exciting. What's happening here? Not much. I've moved on. Not moved on spiritually or emotionally or in maturity stakes, of course. Just moved the boat a little bit, somewhere a little bit quietish. So I'm not opposite the golf course anymore, so I can't grumble about the golf course. Grumble. Gotta have a little grumble. What's life without having a grumble? Now I'm near a park full of kids. Yay! We all love kids, don't we? Not that way. Little bastards. Oh, I don't like kids. Just not really a fan of that. Not really a fan of kids. Oh, they cry and they crap. I don't see the point in them. I'm going to be one of these people who's never going to have kids. I've told Eva that. I've told Eva we're not going to have kids. She's fine with that. She's Kids will just mess up the place for her, you know. It means more work for me, more cleaning for me to do. So, yeah, at least she's appreciating how hard I work as a personal slave. What else is going on? This will probably not come out for another week or so. So, episode 141, Annie Sutton and the Stalker Within. Had a little bit of a problem with that. I pushed it out on the Thursday, as you do every Thursday morning. So if you automatically got it downloaded, that was all good. You would have got it and received it. But iTunes have a tendency to be a bit dickish sometimes. So the episode went out, and then within a couple of hours, they retracted it and deleted it. So then I had to go and sort that out. But the problem is iTunes is not like a regular... They don't like you being able to deal with a human being. They're like, blip, blop, blip, blop, blip, blop, 112, 110, blip, blop, blip, blop. They like you to deal with algorithms and shit. And you don't get to... You want to deal with a human being. So I spoke to Acast, and they were like, well, everything's good at our end. Your RSS feed is good. And I was like, yeah, the episode was there, but it's not there anymore, and I don't know why. And they were like, well, it should be there. And I couldn't find anyone at iTunes. I couldn't find a real human being, and it was taking days, and it was dragging on, and everyone was going, oh, where's this episode? And I was like, I don't know where the bloody episode is. It should be there, but it's not, and there's nothing wrong with it, and I don't know what's going on, and I can't find a human being. And then finally, I managed to get in touch with a real human being, and it was weird. Within a couple of minutes, I was like, boop, there you go. Episode 141, Annie Sutton and the Stalker was in with back on iTunes. Thank God for that. So it's now sorted. So hopefully some of you, sorry about that, some of you will have got your episode about 6 days late, which is really annoying for me as well, because that's extra downloads that people won't have seen. So if you haven't heard it already, go back, have a listen to it. It's a very good one. Good night, Daddy. You get to do that, which is good fun. What else is going on? I'm still on my diet-ish. Still trying to do well-ish. Trying to stay off carbs. Trying to stay off wheat. You know what's like. White bread, shit like that. Pasta. I don't really eat pasta anyway. I find pasta really dull. I probably mentioned this before. I really just... Pizza, pasta. It's just the same. I'd hate to be Italian. It's just the same shit every time. Mediterranean foods I love. I love all the mezzes and stuff like that. Do you know, I love pickles and you know, olives and all that. And, you know, chopping up all your vegetables. And, oh, it's very nice. I just don't like this. I don't like sauces. So that's not too much of a problem. Hence, no cake today. Haven't got a cake. Although yesterday... might have broken a little bit yesterday. I had an egg custard tart. And then I went into Wenzel's because there's one down the road, and I bought a sandwich and a Diet Coke. I'm on pop, but just the horrible chemically stuff, not the fattening stuff. So I'll probably die of some weird kind of brain thingy because of all the Diet Coke I've had. And then with that, I was like, "Oh, what treat do you get with the sandwich?" Because it was a meal deal, and I said, "Can I get a Belgian bun?" And then what's the deal with this? And they went, "Oh, no, you can get the Belgian bun with it." And I was like, oh, bollocks, well, I have a donut as well. So I had a donut, and then I had the Belgian bun, which is good. So the Belgian bun went on to Cake of the Week for Patreon. So if you're a Patreon subscriber, you'll get that soon. Weirdly, it doesn't look as nice online, weirdly, but it tasted really good. What else is going on? Eye situation is still ongoing. I'm still half blind, but I'm getting used to it now. I think, as my eye specialist said, it was like your eyes are going to have to readjust and they're going to refine their shape because these are brand new lenses. So my eyes are getting used to it. So I'm going to have to put up with being half blind in one eye and the other eye a little bit under par. But I don't seem to be getting headaches, which is a good thing. So let's do some questions for the quiz. Of course, questions for a quiz. What else would you do in a quiz, you idiot, Michael? So I hope you're ready. Don't forget, I will mess some of these up, as I always do. Actually, I've been not too bad the last couple of weeks. I've been all right. So let's give them a go. Question number one, ladies and gentlemen. What sport did Tudor do professionally? If you look at the details, you will see that his name is in the UK we would say Tudor because it's T-U-D-O-R, but I always double check everything before I put it out because I hate mispronouncing things, and his girlfriend or his fiance pronounces it Tudor, so I've pronounced it Tudor. as opposed to Tudor, which is what many people have done. Big mistake. That's not the question. Michael, go back. Question number one. What sport did Tudor do professionally? That was the question. Question number two. What was the name of Fast Eddie's first project? What was the big one that was mentioned at the start? You can either go for the name or you can just say what it is, whatever's good for you. Question three, which Romanian city did Tudor and his fiancé fly from? I just said fiancé. I wish I hadn't said that. Fiancé, that's better. Which Romanian city did Tudor and his fiancé fly from? This is really weird having these lenses in, because ever since I had the rat on the boat, which was on my boat for about half an hour until I got rid of it, I've worries about seeing rats and mice everywhere. But because these new lenses are really weird and I'm adjusting to the shape of them and the fact that you get reflections in different places, when I'm looking ahead, I get it looks like there's things running around the sides of my eyes and I'm getting a lot of dark objects flitting around, which I'm going to get used to at some point. But at the moment, my brain still says that they're mice. It's not mice. I haven't got any mice. But you never know. Question four. That wasn't a question. Question four. What was in the pond at the party at 30 Portland Place? And for a bonus question, this isn't in the episode. I didn't know this, but I just found out. Let's see if you know. Which famous scene was filmed from a recent film at 30 Portland Place? You can have that one for free. That will give you 5 bonus points if you can work out what was filmed at 30 Portland Place. But the question was, what was in the pond at the party at 33 Portland Place, sorry. Right. Michael, you're all over the shop. 5. How much does it cost to rent 80 Park Lane per month? Yep. That is basically what Eva gives me as a salary for every 5 years, if that helps you work it out. Question 6. What time did the party start and finish? And what time was it meant to finish? So what time did the party start and what time was it meant to finish? Question 7. What make of petrol station was next door to 80 Park Lane? Question 8. What was smashed inside the hallway by one of the group? Question 9. What was Fast Eddie holding when the attack happened? Probably the bouncer's hand, I'm guessing. Question 10. What type of car did Attu, the doorman, throw one of the gang over? Right, let's... So hopefully I'll remember to do the answer to the questions, unless I forget. Let's have a quick slurp of a... peppermint tea, that's good. That really good for peppermint tea, good for headaches. I'm starting to get one at the moment. Right, let's just do some details that didn't make it into the episode. As always, as you know, sometimes there's things that you just can't get to in an episode, and sometimes it's not worth dragging it out and making the episode a little bit boring. So that's hence why Extra Mile comes in useful. As mentioned in the episode, there was a little bit of trouble previously to Tudor turning up and before the attack. So about 3 a.m, the manager of the petrol station next door, the brand of which I won't mention, he had actually called the police. There had been a fight going on in the forecourt. A group of men and women in their 20s, who were dressed in Gucci and designer labels, were fighting amongst themselves and threatening customers. Police were called. They also called the council, who sent down an official. And someone there got stabbed. But this wasn't the group who would turn up later on. It just kind of shows that, you know, around that time, there were a lot of riffraff kind of in the area and idiots carrying knives. People and knives, just grow up. Learn to communicate. You don't need a knife if you can communicate. So let's dive into some extra things we already kind of covered. The fight itself is a little bit hard to explain. This took me weeks of going through all the different documentation, because all the documents that are out there are quite vague, because I don't think everyone really knows what was going on. So I spent months going through all the different descriptions and watching. I've got some video that was released by the police. There were two different CCTV, video cameras from mobiles that were used at that point. So I've kind of tried to compare them. And where people have been confirmed that this is them, I've used that information, but where it hasn't, I've deliberately kept it vague, because I can't go saying that one person did this when clearly they didn't. So after Tudor had been stabbed, he was just stabbed once in the chest. Club promoter Leroy Rose, who was 25, these are his words. I used part of it in here. He said, I saw him coming back inside. He was in a suit and it was covered in blood. He didn't have a protective vest or anything important, as mentioned earlier on in the episode. I saw blood coming from his chest. I pulled him into the back and grabbed a towel and held the wound. The bathroom itself was, there's several on the kind of that floor. They look very nice. They're ornate. They have different lighting. But at that point, to make it kind of erotic, and the lights were in red. So it probably made his job a little bit harder. But he said he never said a word. He was in shock. He only survived for a minute. He'd been stabbed in the middle of the chest. A police body-worn footage later showed him being treated by Adam L. Shalakani. I had difficulty saying that during that. So I didn't put that in the episode, but Adam was one of the people who was trying to help Tudor at the point, having been stabbed. But unfortunately, as mentioned, Tudor was... he died literally after a minute. The paramedics arrived. There was nothing they could do. And he was pronounced dead at 6:05. Post-mortem examination said the cause of death was a single stab wound to the chest. It matched the knife that of what they could see. What else are we going to do? Murder weapon. So this didn't... I briefly mentioned this in the episode, but it was kind of... It wasn't right to put it in at that point. So Shema Lamarani, 26. I think she was Adam L. Shalakani's girlfriend at the time. So she was with the group. She was one of the girls who was with the group around the time. When it went to court, she denied perverting the course of justice after allegedly disposing of the murder weapon, i.e. the knife. Jurors heard that Lamrani can be seen moving over near to Ulford Street, which is one street south behind the is this a question? Yeah, sod it. The mini car showroom. I don't think it was a question I was going to put in. Where there were several large bins. It is said that she disposed of the knife in one of those bins. Now, the problem was those bins, because it was nighttime, obviously you got the bin men kind of out, emptying all the bins by that point. And apparently those bins were emptied before a police cordon had been put in place in that area, because obviously you got the police cordon around where the attack is happening. But no one's really thinking about the wider area at that point. But she was found not guilty in court, i.e. there was not enough evidence. When you actually look at the scene itself, it's like around the car park. I worked in a car park years ago. Car park, a garage forecourt. And there was 15 cameras in there, like in the forecourt, but none outside. And actually there was one camera which was out in the car wash out back, but it never worked. So all the druggies who were in the area knew that if they wanted to go anywhere to cause trouble, they could just go into the car wash. It didn't work anyway, and the cameras didn't work. So also we had a shit boss as well, and we realized that the bulk of the cameras were focused on us. And then I realized that the manager, who was a complete twat, he compiled a little video of all the mistakes that we'd made. And then even worse, this was even worse. He was sent a brochure on becoming a good manager, and in front of us he looked at it, crumpled it up, threw it in the bin and went, "Oh, I don't need that." We were like, "You twat." He'd been given the petrol station by his dad as a 21-year-old birthday present. A birthday present for his 21st birthday. That's better. It sounded like it was an old present. Anyway, so Shema Lamrani. It is the Crown's case that she took the knife that she had seen being used from Mr. Hamid, so that's Osama Hamid, and then she disposed of it in one of the bins on Ulford Street before it could be found. Unfortunately, they couldn't prove that in court, so she was found not guilty. Didn't go into these details in the case, but a lot of the guys fleed afterwards. Not all of them, but some of them did. So Osama Hamad, he was the one who did the stabbing. And Noor Hamadi, he was the one who... I believe he was the one who... Was he the one who tipped over the bin? I can't remember. They fled the country the next day. They got on a ferry to Calais. And by the 2nd of January, they'd arrived in Paris. From there, they went to Barcelona before flying to Morocco in North Africa. And they ended up in Rabat, which is the capital. It was there that Noor Hamadi received a call from his mother to say the police had contacted her, explaining... And he explained to her that he was not the knife man. He said he was staying with Osama for 3 or 4 days, 4 or 5 days maximum. He was going out. Osama was going out, but he said that he was not in the mood for going out. But when Osama had left, he got a bag and he personally left himself. He went to Tangiers. He felt that this is Noor Hamadi, he felt that he was being used as a scapegoat. His exact words were, "Mr. Simeonov and me had no issue, I had no quarrel with him, he was just a security man doing his job at the end of the day." So Noor Hamadi actually came back to the country and he was arrested at the end of the month. But police kind of knew what was going on, they got all the information, but what they needed to do was to find these people. As mentioned, because all of them had acted together as a group, therefore they were considered equally responsible for the death of Tudor. So Adam, Khalili, Noor Hamadi, Haroon Akram, and as mentioned, Osama Hamad. They were the main four kind of responsible for this. Even though it was Osama Hamad who was directly responsible for inflicting the fatal stab wound which killed Mr. Simeonov because he was holding the knife. That's what was said at the Old Bailey. Philip Evans QC prosecuting said, "At the time of the stabbing, the knife which was used was not in the hand of any of these defendants before you. It was being held by a man named Osama Hamad. Osama Hamid was directly responsible for inflicting the fatal stab wound which killed Mr. Simeonov. He, however, cannot be tried in the course of this trial because he had fled the jurisdiction." So when the trial was the initial trial was happening at Westminster Coroner's Court, and then it went to the Old Bailey, he still hadn't come back by that point. He was still hiding away in another country. So they had to try the others first. They were tried with... the lesser charge of manslaughter, which is what they said to violent assault, GBH, against the various bouncers who were there. So as mentioned, what else have we got? So Noor Hamadi was arrested as he attempted to re-enter the UK on board a flight at Gatwick Airport on the 17th of February 2019. So he'd fled for about 6 to 7 weeks. Adam Khalili had also travelled to Morocco, and he too was arrested on his way back. When the police got to his home address on the 29th of January, he had unsuccessfully attempted to evade arrest by jumping out of a window. What else have we got? Let's see what else. The police investigation was relatively simple. There's forensics were on the scene relatively early. As you can appreciate, it's a high traffic area, so there's be a lot of fingerprints there, but there was a lot of kind of a lot of visual witnesses. They also had mobile phone footage. They got two pieces of footage, but they were still appealing for witnesses to come forward, because when they were looking at the one piece of footage they got, they were able to see that there was quite a few people with cameras as well, but a lot of these people didn't come forward, and it's hard to point out who these people were. It's amazing that people would have this kind of information, but they wouldn't come forward, and yet they would happily upload it online so they can get likes. What else have we got? As mentioned, yet there were no... this was the problem with the case, is that there were no... the knives were never found. So even though the bin men had turned up and you kind of know where the bin men are, therefore, if you go to the tip, you know where afterwards you'll be able to find kind of any layer. The problem is it's hundreds of feet wide, the amount of junk, and especially it's New Year's Eve, so the bin men would have been working flat out, clearing the streets of all the bottles and all the crap left by all the piss heads. So, unfortunately, the knife was never found, which is a real problem. And, as mentioned in this episode as well, you've got two pieces of video footage from mobile phone cameras. One caught the early part of the attack from a different angle. The second one, which is nearer and is much clearer, and you can see exactly who it is. The footage cuts out just before the murder itself. Unfortunately, it was never said whether the person who shot the footage had either switched it off deliberately or whether it was edited that way. We don't know. But unfortunately, that wasn't used in court. The footage was, but we unable to see Osama stabbing Tudor, which is absolutely vital for the footage. The police felt that they had irrefutable evidence, even though they hadn't got the video footage. But fortunately, that didn't make it to trial. So therefore, it ended up not being a murder case. It ended up being a manslaughter case. His girlfriend, Magdalena Angel, I've put it down as, but there's two different versions of this. It's either Angle or Angle, or Angel. So I put an Angel. She said Tudor was only 33 years old, and we'd planned our whole lives together. And by losing him, I have lost everything. She said she was pleased that the two men had been convicted, but we must now keep working to find Osama Hamed, who remains on the run from the police. This was after, so the first trial happened, and then it was obviously a second trial when Osama Hamed was caught. She added, imagine how you would feel knowing that one of those involved in the death of your loved one was still walking free. She said, we were meant to be getting married, but instead of attending our wedding, I've been attending court. Instead of going to church to arrange our wedding, I was going to church to bury him. My life has been turned upside down. She said, Tudor and I met 3 years ago at university in Romania, and in October 2018 we moved to London to start a new life. Tudor was a professional rower and he had been successful in many competitions. He believed that moving to England would be an opportunity to focus on his sport. It's kind of ironic with this that he wasn't meant to be working that night, and everyone kind of said, you know, he's a lovely guy. Even she says he just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. He was simply unlucky. What else? I think that's it. I think that's all the details that I didn't get to put in. As mentioned, his body was repatriated back to Romania and they had a big funeral for him there. There's footage online of the funeral itself. What else have we got? Should I do? Initial committal hearing at Westminster Magistrates Court on Monday the 16th of March 2019. This was just the original one with Noor Hamada, Adam Khalili, Haroon Akram. This was the one that Osama wasn't at. All three appeared for sentencing later at the Old Bailey via video link from Belmarsh Prison. Just having a whiz through this. It's a little bit complicated as it goes through. It's kind of that they're tried for so many, as you can appreciate, the kind of the prosecution are trying to put through as many charges as possible because they know that the defense are going to bat away as many as possible. So if you put in as many charges as you can, you know that some will disappear, and then hopefully you can get them charged with some serious stuff, which they did. What else we got? Osama Hamada was arrested at Gatwick Airport and he told officers he was not a murderer. He denied murder but admitted manslaughter and five counts of GBH with intent and violent disorder. He was convicted of violent disorder and four wounding charges, but the jury failed to reach a verdict against him on a charge of murder. Hamada finally admitted to manslaughter during the trial. It was a difficult trial for the jury. The jury had been discharged after failing to reach some verdicts in the trial of The killing. What else have we got? There was a secondary hearing held at the Old Bailey on the 23rd of September. So that was the one that Hamad was actually charged at. What else have we got? I think that's it. I think that's the lot. Don't really know much more about Fast Eddie after that point. He's probably gone on to another scheme. Get a job. Get a job, mate. Get a job. Come on. You're rich. You got money. You don't need to work for a living. Just enjoy your life and stop pretending that you've got great plans. Right. Let's do answers to the questions. I don't think I messed up many. I don't think I did. That's a miracle. Okay. What sport did Tudor do professionally? He was a rower. He was part of a four-man sculling crew. Sculling crews are those really, really sharp, razor-like boats, and everyone's kind of in an order, and they're very low down. You get them on the Oxford and Cambridge boat race, the world's most pointless sport. But it's on telly, because everyone who worked in telly either went to Oxford or Cambridge. Whoopie-fucking-do. But it's a four-man crew. I think he used to do two-man crews as well. Question number two. What was the name of Fast Eddie's first project? It was the Gatecrasher Balls, which was it sounds like paedophilia, to be honest. It was the thing where he said, like, it's for posh kids of rich parents, you know, and it's for Lolitas and Lotharios to turn up. Twats, basically. Question three. Which Romanian city did Tudor and his fiance fly from? I did it again. It was Bucharest. Question four. What was in the pond at the party at 33 Portland Place? It was 1,000 litres of cognac. What a waste. What a waste. Why not just fill it full of water, colour it and add some booze flavouring? Who's going to drink out of a pond? Honestly. The other extra question I put in there was 33 Portland Place. What was filmed there? And this was used in the King's Speech as Lionel Logue's surgery. I think it's being re-renovated as something kind of posh at the moment. But it has also been used as a location for a gay porn film called The King's Peach. There you go, you can treat yourself. Question five. How much does it cost to rent 80 Park Lane per month? That's £16,000. £16,000 a month. What a waste of money. Question six. What time did the party start and what time was it meant to finish? 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. What was the make of petrol station next door to 80 Park Lane? It's an Esso garage. It's still there today. It looks really weird because you have all these posh car showrooms and posh hotels. And then in the middle of it, you have an Esso garage and a Londis. And you just go, okay, that's weird. Question eight. What was smashed inside the hallway by one of the group? It was a vase. Question nine. What was Fast Eddie holding when the attack happened? It was a credit card machine. And 10. What type of car did Attu the doorman throw one of the gang over? It was a grey Lamborghini. That's good. Well done, Michael. You got this done early, which means I can spend the next 2 days editing. Lovely. Tired. Good. That's that done. Hope you enjoyed that episode. Hopefully iTunes won't be a massive idiot this time and won't balls up this episode and mean that people can't get to listen to it. Sorry if that kind of affected you. I always get the episodes out early and edited early and make sure they get out, and I always make sure you get an episode even when I'm not going to be able to do an episode. But it's so, which is why it's really annoying when iTunes come along and go, meh, algorithm says no. Oh, bastards. Anyway, that's that. Hope you're all well. Hope you're all safe and happy. And I will speak to you all soon. Stay safe. Be good. Lots of.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.